We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. In a night of bad process and good results, first, the Lakers sleepwalked through a win against the Memphis Grizzlies, just barely, but they did end up pulling off the win. We will, I think, talk about that game a little bit, but after that, it was a great night of standings watching, guys. It was so much fun. We had the Golden State game starting at 7 p.m. Pacific time, the time zone we're in, and got to watch the Pelicans get a big win that put the Lakers ahead of the Warriors. Zion was great. Trey Murphy III hit like just some bombs, and the Lakers play them tomorrow, and we're going to preview that game in a little bit. And then right after that, the Suns completed a comeback, getting a one-point win at the Sacramento Kings, which, when all the dust settles, the Lakers control their own destiny for the eighth seed. And basically, D, the Lakers have to win two out of their next three games, and they're in the playoffs. I think it's about as simple as that. Now, the opponents can certainly vary, and there are a lot of different scenarios, but I will take that, considering the way this year has gone. I've really wanted to just get to the playoffs. Denver loses a big game and they drop to the three seed. We'll see what happens as OKC, Minnesota, and the Nuggets all battle for that number one seed. But D, talk to me about where your head's at after a clarifying Friday night.
It really was a great night to be a Lakers fan, which is why we're recording on a Saturday morning.
That's right. We were like, we got to go.
Well, also too, it's just like, this is where I wish, well, not wish that they saw all of the texts, but the text thread was jumping last night as Mike's internet cuts out for part of it. And
oh yeah, we're giving him the play-by-play of the Suns Kings game just real quickly.
Yeah. He's like, what's up with the score, and how's it this again? And it was a great night though to be a Lakers fan, for sure. The Lakers game itself was stressful enough, but then those other games were super stressful as well. And so the Lakers certainly had rooting interests, Mike, and their own game was the biggest part of that, of course, but it was also the part that was maybe the most frustrating as a Lakers fan. I was fairly frustrated. Mike, I'd love to get your perspective on what it was like in the building. The Memphis crowd seemed especially juiced for the Lakers to visit in one of the last games of the year. The Grizzlies had 13 players who were on the injured list, and including basically all of their main guys, and all those dudes were on the bench as well. It's just like, I wonder how many rows they had to clear in terms of having all of those people there. And so it's a bunch of guys who are trying to make their name in the league. They're just scrambling to every loose ball and attacking the offensive glass without consequence at all. And so I know Pete was saying that we'll talk about the Memphis game some, but that is the introductory chapter to what was a great Lakers night. The Lakers did come up with a critical win, but Memphis made it hard on them. And it was one of the things that I was trying to crystallize in the Three Things preview, is that the Lakers better come into this game with clear eyes and the right amount of focus and energy, because Memphis was certainly going to bring the energy with all of those young guys. trying to push them as hard as they possibly could. And they did push them as hard as they possibly could. It was a one possession game, and the Lakers needed some stops there at the very end in order to get a win against guys who it was a game full of, like, who is this dude? Beyond maybe like G.G. Jackson, who has made a name for himself very recently.
To just touch briefly on the Memphis game, and then I want to get to some of the what it was like on the plane last night. And you guys referenced the Wi-Fi going out a little bit, but for the most part, it was working. And I had, you know, so I had the Warriors game on the iPad, and then I had the Kings Suns game on the laptop. And the Lakers, some guys, some key parts of the Lakers analytics staff were sitting right next to me. The coaches are in the section like right ahead of us. And then the rest of the broadcast crew were behind us. And, you know, everybody's stream was working at like a slightly different time because it was choppy.
So, but everyone's watching the game pretty much, Mike. Just is that pretty much what it is?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's watching the games. And everybody is. So it was complicated last night. What you guys didn't even mention is the whole 1-2-3 being tied because Denver somehow blows a 23-point lead.
Wemby took it serious. Wemby took it serious, Mike.
Dude, love Wemby.
That's what Wemby does.
What is he like, the 12th best player in the league already or something? Yeah. Like literally. So that's happening. Then Minnesota almost blows their home game, but they end up pulling it out. And so all of a sudden, then I'm looking at three-team tiebreaker situations between those three while still trying to watch the current games. And it's like, oh, okay, wait. So if Minnesota wins in their finale, then they're going to be the 2 seed. OKC will be the 1 seed because they have the 3-team. So all this stuff is going on. It just craziness. And to where I started here was the Memphis game. I was talking to what we have a great producer on Spectrum named Mark Shaw, and I have a button that goes to him. So like before the game, I'm like looking around. I'm watching all of the Memphis vets on the sideline, and it's Ja, and it's Jaren Jackson Jr. and Marcus Smart, and they're all standing up and kind of like just, hey, young guys, like go out, kick these guys' ass. Like it's the vibe in the arena is live. The Lakers know that they have to win, but there's always going to be a human nature element where it's a little bit difficult sometimes to try harder than the tryhards when you are also envisioning what's going to happen next. And I feel like some people are always going to push back at this. And one of them is Stu. Yeah. And Stu does not accept this. Stu thinks that your team should play harder. And Pete, too. Your team should play harder than the other team every time. You can't. No. You can't always play harder than the other team. You can't. I have been in way too many arenas, and I told our guys this was going to happen. It's going to be a tighter game. It's just going to happen. Memphis is going to, every single time they make a play, their bench is going to get nuts. The crowd's going to get into it. They're going to hit threes, like, and the Lakers are going to have to find a way to execute down the stretch, and they did. Does that mean the Lakers played perfect? No. There were some players that did not play hard enough, period. And you, if you want to talk about which ones, great. But like overall, the game went as I thought it was going to go. And nonetheless, as LeBron said in the walk-off, they won the game. That's what had to happen. And that set up the scenario where they have to win. They are back to controlling their own destiny in terms of getting into the 7-8 game, which is what we wanted all along. Yep. Out of these last couple of weeks, just give them a shot to control their own destiny, to get up to the 2 by winning a play-in game. So it wasn't pretty, and I just am quicker to give credit to Memphis in this context and those guys really battling than I am to besmirch the Lakers too much for being in a game like that.
I get that. I, like you said, I tend to be more towards Stu, and my argument is not to play harder than a bunch of young guys fighting for their life in the league. It's just play harder than that, right? And even Rui in post game was talking like we were messing around for most of that game and didn't get it done.
But Pete, why though? Why?
Because they knew they were way better than the guys across from them and that they could turn it up at any point.
So in other words, human nature.
Sure. But that human nature is going
to... It's what happens. It happens over and over and over again. Every night in the NBA, this happens. And then we act all surprised.
But it's not January, Mike. Guys, it's not January.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. No, this happens in playoff series. This happens in the finals. When you win game one, how much harder is it to win game two?
That doesn't happen in the finals.
Happens.
No. I'm not,
yes,
I'm
it
not
does.
Saying that...
I've been to games in the finals where it happens. It happens.
I am not saying that there is not a human nature element to basketball in the circumstances that are around you. I'm saying there's a floor to that of like what's acceptable and what's not. I was totally with what Rui was saying after the game of like, yeah, that's not That's not going to cut it. And that's something that, to me, your habits catch up to you. And this is part of what this year's Lakers team is. Now, they might end up winning 47 games within that, which speaks to a level of, like, this is still a pretty good team that they were able to get to that point. But that sort of, like, going out there and playing like that as frequently as we have, I will be very surprised if that doesn't catch up to us at the wrong point.
But that's part of who they are in some senses, and it's part of, like, okay, here's an example. LeBron James, with about 3 minutes left in the third quarter, starts defending his ass off. Okay, could he have done that from the first minute of the first quarter?
I'm not talking about LeBron. LeBron is actually exempt from what I'm talking about.
But he's their leader.
Sure.
He's their leader. And so this whole season, which is what I said in the offseason, it is going to be hard for him to play at that level of energy and connectedness as he did more in the 1920 season, when the Lakers won a crazy amount of regular season games and they basically had the pedal down throughout the whole postseason run. Like, this, I said this was going to happen before the game, and then we're still mad that it happens. Like, it's what
I'm mad about the degree that it happens. I'm mad about the degree that it happens. I think that the effort level is just way too low. It's just way too low in those game.
Yeah, this is what it's been, though. Basically all season.
Yeah, that's a problem with this team. It's why this team won't fulfill its potential.
Why don't we go to break? Because it really was a great Lakers night. And so while I do think that there are some underlying issues and that there were some things that propped up in this game that the Lakers are going to need to address long term and short term, I think, if they want to do anything in the postseason, I do think, to both your points, it's somewhat the personality of the team. It's also the nature of some of the players. And it also reflects, I think, the limitations of the roster and the players who are available and the limitations of who the coaching staff decides to play on any given moment. From LeBron to D'Lo to the athleticism of the guys who are available to whether or not Gabe plays a bunch, or if Jackson Hayes gets more than 5 minutes in a game, the fact that LeBron and AD basically play the entire second half and how much juice they have left at the end of the game. There were a lot of factors, I think, last night about how the game ended, and some human nature stuff that I know Mike speaks to a bunch. So let's go to break here. And when we come back, I do want to finish up the Memphis stuff, but also get into forecasting forward a little bit.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you stay fueled. They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
I think I have something that Pete and I can agree on wholeheartedly here. And so all of these elements we're just talking about, like which team's going to play harder than the other team, the human nature elements, all of this kind of stuff, which team is what is the baseline level that the Lakers should expect just from the Lakers? Forget a second about who the opponent is. And that's part of, I think, Pete and Stu's point. And I get that. If you're in a situation, the Lakers have been in many times this year, and energy is one of the things that you're looking for, I would play Jackson Hayes more than 5 minutes. And I would put Gabe Vincent back in the fourth quarter when he was like plus 27 because of the way that he played in that sense. And I might play Max Christie, and I would play fewer of the minutes where it's, you know, Prince, Dinwiddie, Russell, and times are playing like another guard next, like Prince being
Prince, Dinwiddie, and Gabe. Russell, Gabe, and usually AD.
Yeah, with Prince at the four and then AD. So like that's even if that's 10. So 5 minutes more of Rui Hachimura and 5 minutes more of Jackson Hayes. And to me, that kind of gets you over that threshold of where like the energy or the athleticism or lack thereof. And this is the whole first part of the season by playing Reddish and Prince a certain amount more than Rui and Vanderbilt when he was healthier, and, you know, Max Chris, whoever it is. So that to me is part of this. And I thought that played out very much so in this Memphis game when the Lakers had established some control of it. And then it started to get pulled away a little bit. So that I think is a through line that we've seen all season. It is frustrating as it is. We've clearly not seen it changing. And the other factor was not giving AD and LeBron the rest to start the fourth quarter and them starting to wear down and, you know, settle for threes and such in the final couple of seconds. So those are to me things that are less about like players and energy level and effort level and just sort of the like putting players in positions where that stuff takes care of itself more naturally.
One of the lines of delineation that we've made throughout the season is big versus small. But to me, another line of delineation is your ability to play with like force and strength versus your ability to be purely a skill player.
Right, which is not necessarily the same thing as being big versus small.
It's not, because Gabe can play with a certain amount of force and have a certain amount of skill. LeBron and AD obviously can play with force and have skill. Rui can play with force and have skill. Some of the other Lakers players can only play with force or can only play with skill. Hayes has a certain amount of skill in him, but he is a more forceful, like, athlete player. And I think Vando falls into that category as well. I think to a certain extent, is like that.
I was going
to
bring him up to
a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of athletes that can, yeah.
Max is a little bit like this as well. And then on the skill side, it's like Austin, D'Lo, Dinwiddie, I think to a certain extent, because he has not been as forceful of a driver and finisher. The tricky thing is about skill is that it can come and go. And force typically does not come and go, but you cannot always be a hammer.
Sure.
Right? Sometimes you do need to be both things. And that's why the Rui, LeBron, AD, like, trio are super important to this team. And I think it's also why in his plus minus, which has been the same like all season, really, Gabe matters in here as well, because he brings a certain amount of, hey, I can do stuff with the ball while also defending and being a hard-nosed point of attack player. And one of the things I'm interested in, not only in the Pelicans game, but moving forward into the playoffs, is striking the right balance between your players who can be forceful and play with skill and have their skill level not drop off, right? And this is where I don't want to get into this huge discussion about D'Lo at this point, but D'Lo is someone who the last few games, as the intensity is ramped up, his level has basically been at a level that's either at the level or a little bit below, and it's showing in his individual production, I think. And I'll be interested to see what the choices are, not only in the Pelicans game, which is a must-win game, and I'd love to transition here to the Pelicans game, but also moving forward, the play-in games, and then if the Lakers do get there, the playoff games, all of those games are must-win games, and the intensity is going to ratchet up and up and up. And so I wanted to present those ideas to both of you as like skill and force and the Venn diagram between that, and then how you envision the coaches and the rotation being worked out in that way.
So with respect to Gabe and D'Lo, we were talking about Gabe on yesterday's pod, and he had the idea of cutting down to eight and being like, hey, you know, it might be his spot that needs to go. Now, in a game where energy is at a premium, I've never seen Gabe Vincent not play hard in a game. He pretty much brings that same level of force that you're talking about regardless. And in a game that is so lacking that, that's going to really result in a great plus minus. I do think in the really serious basketball games that we've got coming up, everything from here on out is going to be that, that he is going to need to score at some point. But through the framework of D'Lo, I think you need a guy that is D'Lo insurance, meaning that when D'Lo has these sorts of nights, you can have a guy who can come in and do the job. And Mike, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when you're talking about putting Gabe back in the game, the guy I was thinking of doing it for was for D'Lo, right? In terms of like, hey, you don't, like, you're not bringing
that's fair.
Yeah, you know, like, you're not bringing an appropriate level of intensity, and like, you shouldn't be in the game as a result of that. And Gabe can come in and do the job. Now, do you lose a lot of that offensive production? Of course. But again, these are under those conditions where D'Lo disappears, which is probably not the last time that's going to happen. I didn't think Austin was particularly good either, right? He was, I think, our worst plus minus player in that game, which of course is, you know, that can mean a whole lot of things, but he didn't his activity, I thought, was very low, just across the board, right? And it's, I know this is to your point, Mike, of the human nature and knowing that, hey, that's Scottie Pippen Jr. across from us. That's a guy that was in our G League program. I've played against him. We're fine, right? That whole mentality kind of seeps in. That's been a big part of the season, frankly. And like, yeah, we've still been able to win games. And I know that the ceiling of this team is very high, but that to me is just, it's bad habits, D, and it's something that concerns me, you know?
Austin, also the only guy to play in all 81 games to this point in the season. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a little bit of grace for him in terms of what his asks have been and how much he's actually played. That said, 0 rebounds for Austin, 1 assist for Austin. Those aren't his tip, 5 fouls, right? And so a lot of, you could tell, like maybe a bit, like a step slow. And I don't know if for Austin that's as much mentality. Like, I think it's some mentality. I also think it's some physical wearing down. I think for D'Lo, yeah, it was different to me. He clearly was not at the level. And then I think he got a bit embarrassed after that poke away steal that Scottie Pippen then dove on the ground. And then 2 possessions later, D'Lo gets a key block shot. And it's just like, that's the level you need to be at right here. And so you can put words in my mouth with that point too, Pete. Like, I was ready to pull out D'Lo for Gabe Vincent as well.
Yeah. So I, in the background, I'm watching Manchester United, which you guys know is like where I, this is probably like when you guys were kids, right? And the passion behind the Lakers, like the United is the place where I'm separated enough from it that I could just get really mad irrationally.
Nice.
And you guys are rational. But so we, one of our biggest problems this year, we just don't, and like, I almost sound like Pete, like we don't play hard enough in the midfield. But the reason is because we play the wrong guys in the midfield. And the other team has guys that are in there that are more willing to play both sides. Like, we've got a couple of goal hunters that just push up and basically try to play as third and fourth strikers.
This sounds familiar.
And we just get cut open like just a hot knife through butter going in the other direction. And it enrages me. But I am not like just blaming the players. I am blaming the positions that they are being put in. And I'm also acknowledging that the other teams are all playing hard. And then there are plenty of other teams. In fact, almost everyone in the NBA, including Denver last night, that lets go of the rope a little bit out of human nature elements, because it's professional sports. And you cannot just say, well, if my team just plays harder than that team,
I'm not saying play harder than them. That's the one thing I will say it again and again and again. I'm not saying play harder than them. I'm saying play harder than that.
But playing harder for us.
Play harder than that.
For us. Okay. And all right. And so let's just leave that. I guess we could probably go back and forth for a long time on it. What I think would be clarifying, why don't we take another break? I will go through the exact scenarios that can happen going forward and where the Lakers are going to end up. And then we can talk about the game itself against New Orleans, a team against whom the Lakers have had some very fascinating matchups already this season. Let's take a break and we'll get to that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Okay, very simply, if the Lakers win, they are the number 8 seed, period. That is where they land. That is where they are right now. It is because they are a game ahead of both the Kings and the Warriors, which is why we wanted the NorCal teams to lose last night. And both of those games were thrilling, as I alluded to earlier. Everybody in the plane is watching. And so the only thing that changes is that the Lakers could play that game against either the Pelicans or the Suns, depending on what the Suns do at Minnesota. So if the Suns lose at Minnesota, then the Lakers actually will play Phoenix, and they would go to Phoenix after being home. If the Suns win, then they are the sixth seed, and the Lakers stay in New Orleans. And we, by the way, were sent a little memo. Hey, in case this situation arises, pack your bags up for an extra game. And so I have an extra suit, and just in case that scenario happens. Now, if the Lakers lose, they're very likely to be the 10 seed. The only way that that changes is if either Sacramento or Golden State wins an easy home game against Utah, which is who Golden State plays, or Portland, which is who Sacramento plays. It's possible. Okay. We just saw those teams blow home games, but they blew home games to teams that were super motivated to win. I just don't think you're counting on that. So lose, you're the 10 seed, and you would play Golden State at Golden State. And I could go have some soup with Darius if that happened. So the whole point, though, of all of these permutations we've been doing, guys, for the last several weeks is how can the Lakers get up to the 8 seed from the 10? And they would have to pass two teams to do so. Golden State beats the Lakers, and all of a sudden it's like, well, they'd have to drop a home game. They did it. They had to drop a home game. Sacramento's going to have to lose two games in a row. They did. And so here you are. The opportunities in front of you. The only little flip side element is that New Orleans, of course, is trying to avoid the play-in, and they know that if they lose it, not only do they have the play-in, but they might have to play the Lakers again. So they're highly motivated. All right, that's enough. That's all the scenarios. What is the thing that stands out the most to you guys?
Pete, the thing that I'm interested in is that Mike and the Lakers probably beat the Pelicans to New Orleans.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, we did. We got in at about 1 o'clock. My guess is that it was another hour before the Pelicans touchdown from Golden State.
Yeah, maybe even later than that, Mike, because you guys were watching the end of that game on the plane.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably a couple hours, yeah.
And they're coming from San Francisco, and you guys came from Memphis, which is much closer.
Memphis is very close. Yeah, it's like an hour flight.
New Orleans has been playing a gritty style of basketball, Pete, and they have been hanging in there. They've been without Brandon Ingram. Zion has been going full Zion. Now, I don't think he was as productive as he even could have been against the Warriors. Like, Draymond is a nice little antidote to Zion in a lot of ways, but he got some switches and he killed the switches. Like, oh, Andrew Wiggins, I'm going right through you. And then McCollum got hot against the Warriors, and then Trey Murphy was just bombing threes from the old Oracle Arena. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh my goodness, like you're all the way across the Bay Bridge here shooting these. New Orleans is clearly invested in not falling into the play-in game. But the Lakers are a tricky team for them to play as well, because they're the one team that also has size and strength in the positions that New Orleans is used to beating up other teams doing that, right? Zion took it right to Sabonis and Trey Lyles and all of those dudes. And he can do that some against Anthony Davis and LeBron, but not to the degree that he can to like 90% of the rest of the league, right? And then the Lakers have their own advantages in some ways with their guards and their ability to shot create. And then Anthony Davis is the great, we don't really have an answer for you at all. And it's just like, just pray he's missing shots to a certain extent.
Mike said it, and you said it.
there have been some very interesting games. What do you see as the sort of X factor for a must-win game for both of these teams?
So I think the Pelicans by nature are a defense-to-offense type of team. That's really how they've get going. Now, we've got Brandon Ingram returning for this game. We'll see where he's at after missing. I think he's missed about 10 games or so. And we'll see how hitting the ground running he is, but in his absence, and as has been the case even while he's been there at points this season, Zion's run a lot of point guard. I think he's playing the best basketball of his career right now. He did not shoot particularly well. Draymond's a great, like, beat you to the spot. I know the scouting report inside and out, so I'm going to make you go to, like, everyone wants to send Zion to his right. Actually, doing that is extremely difficult. Draymond's one of the guys that is sharp enough and can beat a guy to the spot that can do it. But Zion had like 5 or 6 steals in that game. And that is something that, if in terms of possible advantages they have over us, our recent flurry of, and like LeBron especially, of turnovers, I should say, that is something that feeds right into what the Pelicans do. If they can get deflections, they've got guys like Dyson Daniels and Herb Jones, Trey Murphy III, long arm guys, Jose Alvarado, of course, that if they can get out and run and Zion is part of that, they can get, you know, easy shots at the rim, transition threes. That's really their style of game. If you can contain them into the half court, now BI obviously changes this mix quite a bit, Mike, but I do think that is an advantageous game for the Lakers. And that's something that, as the Lakers have played, they played the Pelicans in the in-season tournament semifinals in Vegas and just whomped them. And there was another game where D'Lo went off. He had that flurry of like 14 points in 2.5 minutes in the second quarter. It's an interesting matchup, Mike, but they are a team that's playing well, playing hard. They will really make you work on offense, meaning that they're going to make their rotations. They'll close out well. They'll have high hands. They have the ability to turn us over. So curious what you see out of our matchup on Sunday against the Pelicans.
The thing that stood out the most to me, maybe from the whole season, was that in-season tournament semifinal game. And I thought that was probably the best that I've seen the Lakers play. And LeBron, I alluded to this earlier, like the way that LeBron was playing defense in that third quarter, where he was just putting Jake LaRavia in jail and then rotating down to the baseline and just everywhere. LeBron took Zion out of that game. Zion, you just talked about all the stuff that Zion likes to do, going right at a guy, going downhill. And Draymond, yes, did a good job, as good a job as most could do. Zion still went right by him a couple times and finished at the rim. And Zion is in much better shape than he. I've heard this before. He's lost a bunch of weight. I've heard from people that have seen him in person recently that he looks almost like a different guy from what he did in December. So that's going to be more of a challenge. But physically, LeBron is one of the few players that can actually limit and engage him, especially when he knows that he has Anthony Davis, who is, you know, not that preoccupied with what New Orleans has at the center spot. Like, maybe it's Valanciunas. If Willie Green had his way, he sometimes doesn't like to play Valanciunas at all, and he would like to play Larry Nance Jr. Nance missed the last couple games, and what I saw, he was out with personal reasons, so I'm not sure exactly what's going on, or if Nance is going to be wanting to play. I think that it would be big for the Pelicans if he can play, because then that at least gives them another option there. But back to the point, like, when LeBron is locked in like this in play-in situations, so he's, what is it, 2-0 in play-in situations, the Timberwolves game and the Warriors game? And then in the in-season tournament elimination games, 3-0. So that would be the semifinal against Phoenix, the aforementioned game against New Orleans, and then, of course, the final. So basically, like, give LeBron and say, this is one game, survive in advance, and you're going to get his best, usually. And so that's my thinking. That's kind of the whole key to this game. If you get LeBron's best, and I am assuming that, I'm assuming you get it offensively. I'm assuming you get a certain amount of focus offensively, then that tends to lead the way. And then, so that's kind of thing number one. Now, in that game, Pete, that you cited, though, it was a 139-122 win at home in early February. D'Angelo Russell had 30 points. Austin Reeves had 27 points. If the Pelicans, when Ingram is healthy, and they start McCollum and Ingram, and then usually it's Herb Jones along with Zion and then Valanciunas, they do not defend the perimeter particularly well. And I think that's reflected in Austin and D'Lo, because they're trying to figure out, how do we contain Davis? Well, Jonas can't do it. You know, so they're just overreacting to what AD's doing. LeBron's getting downhill. Zion might not be defending as much, although he's playing more defense now than he was in December. And then all of a sudden, you just got Austin and D'Lo taking whatever threes they want. D'Lo took 13 threes in that game. So that, and then if they want to bring in their more defensive look, and that would be like Trey Murphy, Alvarado,
Daniels,
and like Dyson Daniels, who's a great defensive player. Then to me, though, then they're small. And then they're having to deal, it's harder to deal with LeBron and with Anthony Davis. So I think that's where the personnel, Darius just hinted at this, like they've got a lot of really big like wings and they've got, but they don't quite have that kind of, that bridge player. You know, Nance would be, I guess, kind of the best idea of it, where you get some defense, but he can switch out to the perimeter some. They just don't, none of their bigs can really be versatile defensively. And I feel like that's a death blow against LeBron and AD team. And so they have to kind of pick their poison, and it's all working against them. So that's a lot, Darius, but I like the matchup for the Lakers when they're plugged in for these reasons.
The interesting thing about the Pelicans is that they've got a bunch of rangy athletes, and the Lakers are a team that can be susceptible to rangy athletes in the backcourt, but your rangy athletes also better have some physicality to them, because if they don't, then the Lakers skill guys can still show up. And if your rangy athletes then have to guard LeBron James at any point, he is going to try to bully them as much as possible.
That's kind of the key, Darius, because expand on that. Because if you want to go rangy athletes, and but LeBron's in LeBron mode, then he's just going to kind of nudge
you better
right
not
by
be too tall and skinny. Athletes, right? Yep.
Go back to the playoffs last season, and you may not find a sort of stronger, sturdier, rangy athlete than Andrew Wiggins, right? Wiggins is, he's not like a bulky dude, but he is solidly built and he can stand up to the pounding. And LeBron like damaged his ribs in one of these games, I think. And then in the final game of the series, he was like a boxer who kept throwing the jab at the dude who had the closed eye. And it's just like, oh, you've got a hurt rib? Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the post every single time, and you're going to have to absorb this punishment every single time. And this is where LeBron and AD, getting back to a point I was making earlier about them being able to play with force and with skill, is Herb Jones is probably going to make an all-defensive team. Mm-hmm. He is one of the rangiest and best defensive players in the entire league. LeBron can fold Herb Jones in half. He is not strong enough to deal with him.
LeBron can also do that to Trey Murphy. And players like Dyson Daniels or Alvarado, smaller dudes who were really good sort of physical defensive players, they have no chance against LeBron James. Right. And none of those dudes who I just mentioned, also none of them have a chance against Anthony Davis as well. And so there were possessions where New Orleans would try to go small, and they're like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be the rangy fast team, and we're going to like crowd and swarm. And this is the style. And you know what AD does in those situations? He goes right to the offensive glass. Yeah. And he's like, go ahead, Herb Jones, box me out. Go ahead, Trey Murphy, box me out. You have no chance against me inside. Now, those types of players, though, can present problems defensively for Austin and D'Lo. But when you start to go to those guys defensively, then the Lakers' own defensive game plan shifts. And I remember in the last game in February, or in one of these games, sorry, Dyson Daniels was in the game, and LeBron was defending Dyson Daniels, and yep. They weren't defending him at
no,
all.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that again, where LeBron's a roamer, and a lot of the defensive plays from that game Mike was talking about as the semifinals in the IST, it was like LeBron shooting passing lanes, and a lot of it comes from guarding a guy that you're only sort of guarding, but you're more paying attention to the whole team type of action.
And so this is where the Lakers combination of having forceful forwards with Rui and LeBron, and then the ultimate sort of like hybrid defensive player in Anthony Davis, it's where those guys can start to do more and sort of like create a triangle around Zion, right? And so what the Lakers have typically done is they've put Rui on Zion.
to start games. And they've put LeBron on Herb Jones, and they've basically lived with Herb Jones shooting the three. And Jones has been better at that this season, but LeBron has basically been like, okay, well, what am I willing to give up? And then in later possessions, or in possessions where Rui is not in the game, he will then take on the Zion challenge.
I do not think that that letting Herb Jones shoot threes is a good strategy anymore. He used to have this tag, and Darius, I'm sure you agree. Like, you're just saying what it was. Like that's yes. Definitely what it was. He on the season is one of the, now it's still a relatively low volume, but it's 3.5 per game, and he's shooting 41%. And he's not going to take bad threes. They're mostly going to be when he's open, but he's not one of those guys that you just sort of like, oh, great. Yeah. We know we're going to give something up. Let's just let Herb Jones be the guy that shoots. And yeah, so not that you're saying anything different, but I think that strategy might be tempting for what the Lakers have done in the past. And I think that they, New Orleans and Jones specifically, and even to an extent, Daniels, who hit a couple of threes the other day, like have graduated past that. And I've just seen it burn the Lakers so many times this year that I'm like, can you just late contest at least?
Pete, this is where the idea of what is your intensity level? What is the effort level? This is where it comes back to that. And so you and Mike were going back and forth about this idea a lot. And I think it's a well-made point on both sides, honestly. It's like the Lakers do need to play harder than what they have been in a lot of games.
Just quick qualifier for that. The Memphis game to me is different from the New Orleans game.
I don't think that's going to happen again. That whole like, unless we're up like, so to Mike, to your point earlier, we're not going to sweep anybody. Yeah. If we're up, say we get two road wins in a series, we're up we get two wins in a series and we're up 2-1 or 2-0 or 3-1. I definitely think we're losing that next game just based off the personality of the team and what you're talking about. Yeah. But no, these games, I'm not worried about that in these games.
Right. But like in this case, so let me just kind of fully come over. If I see sort of no closeout, late closeout, like whatever, in the first minute of the New Orleans game, I'm right there with Pete and Stu in this game.
Sure.
In this game, like that. So I do think it just changes game to game. And yes, it means you're going to play with a little fire, and the Lakers played with too much fire. They flew a little too close to the sun
in
Memphis, but they did win the game. They did win the game. And so, but if I'm totally over to your side. This is the game where if you're not going to bother closing out to Jose Alvarado when he comes in off the bench, then yell at the person who did it and bring somebody else in. Like there's no space for that at all in this type of a game.
And this is where the individual matchup advantages, I think, lean towards the Lakers a little bit more, but that can always be disrupted by shot making.
And also turnovers, like they get a lot of deflections. We make a lot of passes that get deflected. And that's the type of thing where like, that's a quick 8-0, 10-0 type of run.
Well, this is also where five out spacing, I think, has hindered the Lakers
in its own way,
because the flat angle passes are just more prevalent in a five out style. And if you're not constantly thinking ball security, ball security, ball security, you will turn the ball over because you're used to making these passes.
When the Warriors are bad, how are they bad normally? They're throwing the ball all over the gym. And it was that second quarter that decided that game. And they had like 9 turnovers in that, where I think that's a great point regarding the spacing on that.
We definitely don't have enough time to get into all this, but I'm just trying to relay that to folks that, you know, that don't quite have your basketball acumen. But so if you're running a traditional four, like one in, four out, or just running a bunch of screen roll, like the ball's in LeBron's hands, there aren't going to be the types of passes, A, just because you're not passing the ball as much, and B, the types of passes that defenders could step in the passing lanes on. Whereas in a five-out system, they're constantly going to be a lot of movement and a lot of passing, and this, I guess the Warriors are a way to think about this, if you're used to watching them some. So does that boil down? It's like a higher risk, higher reward type of a system, and if you since the Lakers have adapted to this, and maybe LeBron specifically, he might rather just have a screen and go downhill at certain points instead of kind of just pass the ball right along, and that leads to some of the sloppiness.
Yes. So I actually think it's a concentration thing to a great degree. It's like you just have to be mentally sharper. And in our whole back and forth about playing hard, concentration is the manifestation mentally of not being totally in it. You can see guys, oh, they're not running the floor. That's the physical manifestation, or one of several of them. But just not being quite as intentional about, I'm going to make a two-handed chest pass to their outside hand, and I'm going to be really good about that. And so the Warriors got killed in that second quarter in exactly the way that I'm concerned about us getting killed, with the type of turnovers that we've made. Forgive me, I got to wrap it up here, guys, but been a lot of fun. I'm glad we recorded this one. Go Lakers. Let's go get that eighth seed. Again, Lakers win two out of their next three games. They're in the playoffs. We will be back on Monday to discuss how tomorrow's game goes. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out in front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddy pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry. Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.